The next case is 2014-708, Philip LeBoy et al. Versus Grange Indemnity Insurance et al. For the appellant, Mr. Johnson.
Good morning. Chief Justice O'Connor, Justices of the Court, and may it please the Court, I'm Mark Johnson, counsel for the appellant, Grange Mutual Casualty Company, and I would like to reserve 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal, if I may. Plaintiffs claim that Grange paid too much for their medical expenses. Grange paid all of their medical bills. They had no out-of-pocket costs. They didn't forego any medical services, and they didn't reach their medical payment coverage limits. Plaintiffs argue, however, that Grange should have paid their medical providers at lower rates that plaintiff's health insurer had negotiated with those same providers.
Did they pay the same rate that Medical Mutual paid?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, Grange paid more.
After the fact, we understand that at the time, Grange had no way of knowing what Medical Mutual's rate was.
Okay, so there were multiple payments for medical treatment. The health insurer paid some, and Grange paid some?
That's correct, Your Honor. It appears that...
How does that work?
Well, it appears that the plaintiffs had submitted claims to both their health insurer and to their auto insurer, Grange, under the MedPay coverage provision. Grange, the accident occurred in May of 06. Grange learned, or at least the record shows that they learned in late September of 06, that the plaintiffs were in fact insured through health insurance coverage with Medical Mutual.
Who is the primary responsible party under those circumstances for these medical payments?
Grange.
Okay, but the plaintiffs submitted it to Medical Mutual.
As well as to Grange, that's correct.
Okay, and Medical Mutual paid all of the claims?
Well, I honestly don't know. We don't know what they submitted to Medical Mutual, Your Honor. We see some overlap, in discovery, of claims that Grange paid, services that Grange paid, and services that Medical Mutual paid. But whether or not Medical Mutual paid identical overlap, we have no way of knowing.
So Grange pays for whatever the bills are submitted. Do they pay face value or do they have a reduction?
No, Your Honor. The policy requires that Grange pay the lesser of a reasonable and necessary amount for the expense or a negotiated reduced rate accepted by a provider. In fact, that is at the core of this case.
So Grange negotiates a discount on their own?
No, Your Honor.
With the providers?
No, Your Honor. They are a party to a contract with a medical review service currently called ReviewWorks. And ReviewWorks is a party to a preferred provider network. I believe it's referred to as PPO Midwest, to which providers will belong and agree to various rates for services for insurers that contract with ReviewWorks. So Grange does not have a direct contract with medical providers, but indirectly with ReviewWorks.
The bottom line is Grange got a discount because it had employed some agency to get them discounts when they could.
In effect, yes.
All right. So why does this all matter is what I'm having difficulty understanding.
Well, we've struggled with that same question for the last 3 years, Your Honor. In essence, the plaintiffs argue that because Grange allegedly overpaid their medical bills, that their plaintiff's third-party tortfeasor settlement, the net recovery that was reduced because Grange's medical expenses under the policy, they're entitled to be subrogated to any recovery, and they allege that the subrogation amount reduced the net payment
So when their medical provider came back, is that what happened? They came back to get what Grange had paid?
No, Your Honor. When the plaintiff settled with a third-party tortfeasor, Grange was subrogated under that settlement to recover the medical expenses that it, in fact, had paid.
All right. And so that... So the MedPay, in fact, isn't MedPay. It's MedPay only if your insured caused the accident. If there's another tortfeasor who's responsible, you pay the bill, but then you recover what you paid.
No, Your Honor. Medical payments coverage provides for payment of medical expenses to insurers regardless of fault. And also the policy behind that coverage to pay expenses promptly and quickly without any question
right,
about
I understand
fault.
That. But you're getting the money back, right?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. First of all, it's dependent upon one, there being a tortfeasor liable can be recovered from, and two, the plaintiff in fact recovering from that tortfeasor. And then under the policy, Grange has a contractual right, which has been affirmed by this court and others, to recover the exact amount that it paid out, not a penny more.
Okay. So, like I said, it's MedPay, but it's not MedPay if the insured can recover from somebody else.
Well, I disagree with the characterization, Your Honor. I mean, the medical payment coverage both.
But it's contractual, so that they're bound by that.
It is contractual. That's correct, Your Honor.
So what's the difference here between what their medical insurer would have paid or gotten a discount?
The dollar value, Your Honor? At different levels of this case, it has proceeded. The plaintiffs have asserted somewhere between $800 and $900 difference in bills.
And we're here.
Pardon me?
We're here over, this seems like small claims court today then.
I wouldn't disagree with that, Your Honor, but this case was also filed as an alleged class action.
Yeah, this is the tip of the iceberg for the plaintiffs here. If they prevail here, then there's many other Grange insureds that will question the same type of arrangement, correct?
I disagree with that, Your Honor, because I think it will be virtually impossible to identify who those insureds might be. And this takes it way beyond anything that we've already developed in the record here. But identifying the alleged class members here would be a virtual impossible task of trying to determine who, in fact, may have overpaid if, in fact, plaintiff's theory was correct.
Has a trial court determined this is a class action under Rule 23?
No, Your Honor. The only thing that has been proceeded so far is discovery. And then Grange filed its motion for summary judgment because the named plaintiff's claims were not justiciable. And there's no sense to go to class cert if the claims are not viable to begin with.
So medical payments coverage under the automobile policy are paid directly to the claimant?
They're paid under the policy. Grange has the option to pay either the policyholder, the insured, or the medical provider. In this case, that was paid directly to the provider.
To the provider. And the rate that Grange has negotiated through ReviewWorks is higher than what Medical Mutual has negotiated through its network.
Apparently, in certain situations.
And that's the $800 difference?
Correct.
So what we're talking about is the language then in the policy on the medical payments coverage that says that Grange will pay the lesser of any negotiated reduced rate accepted by a medical provider.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And the assertion of the claimant is the negotiated reduced rate accepted by a medical provider is the rate that that medical provider accepted from Medical Mutual. So Grange should make up the difference. Is that the argument anyway?
That is precisely their argument, Your Honor.
So do we need to determine what that language means in that contract?
I believe we do, Your Honor. In fact, that's what the trial court, in fact, concluded in granting summary judgment for Grange. And it held that as a matter of course, first of all the parties agreed, including both trial court and court of appeals below, that a literal reading of that phrase that you just read, Your Honor, would be impossible for Grange to perform. It couldn't pay any provider the rate at which any provider anywhere in the world at any time has ever agreed to.
Well, if I understand your argument, Grange has negotiated with a company called ReviewWorks to negotiate rates for payment of providers.
Correct.
Who else is a party to that contract besides Grange and ReviewWorks?
The medical providers with ReviewWorks.
But no claimant is a party to that.
That's correct.
Presumably, the medical provider here has many reduced contracts with many different insurance companies or healthcare companies, et cetera. Because Medical Mutual had is not identical to the rate that Grange was able to take advantage of, which may not be identical to the rate that Aetna or one of the other insurers. It's subjective. It's an arrangement. My understanding is it's arrangement between the provider and the insurance company, whether it be health insurance or here casualty insurance, correct?
That is our understanding as well, Your Honor.
So is the argument that Grange should have asked the medical provider to lay their cards on the table and show me all the different arrangements you have, dollar amounts that you will accept for a broken leg? Let's just use for a broken leg, what would you accept from Medical Mutual? What would you accept from Aetna? What would you accept from all these other insurance companies? And then you're entitled to pay the least least bill, the least charge. Is that what we're looking at here?
No, Your Honor. Actually, plaintiffs conceded at the trial court at pages 15 and 22 to 24 of their memorandum in opposition that they were not asserting that Grange had an affirmative duty to negotiate lower rates. What plaintiffs assert is that under this language, the plaintiffs, since they have a contract with Medical Mutual, have the ability to access rates that Medical Mutual has agreed with providers, and because they have access and they have a separate contract with Grange, that they can somehow transfer this right of access to Grange to pay Medical Mutual's rates to those providers.
Is that in any contract that they put forth?
No.
And they didn't assert that Grange should have waited and left their Medical Mutual provider pay these bills, did they?
No, Your Honor. In fact, there's nothing in the record to show, in fact, that the plaintiffs asked them to wait before making the medical payments.
They actually presented bills, I assume, to Grange.
In fact, yes, Your Honor. In fact, my understanding, there were also many of them were paid before Grange even knew Medical Mutual covered the plaintiffs as well for health insurance. Okay.
Is this language that we're talking about in the contract, would you consider it to be ambiguous or not?
No, Your Honor, it is not ambiguous. In fact, plaintiffs agreed that the language is not ambiguous. Therefore, it becomes a question of law. The trial court determined as a matter of law that the only reasonable construction of that language is that Grange has to have a contractual right to pay the lesser negotiated rate accepted by a provider. Otherwise, it would be impossible to perform. But unfortunately, the Court of Appeals' error was in concluding that the literal language, because it was impossible to perform the literal language, it thereby became ambiguous without first determining whether there were at least two reasonable constructions of the policy language, which is exactly what this court decided
That's what troubles me today. I'm looking at the Court of Appeals. What did they really do? Because I see they reversed summary judgment, and then they said there are genuine issues of material fact, and they sent it back to the trial court. Why are we here today?
Because the Court of Appeals made a legal error, Your Honor, and that, in fact, was in making the decision that the language in the contract was ambiguous without deciding whether there was more than one reasonable interpretation of that policy. What the Court of Appeals should have done was make the decision whether or not Grange's interpretation of the contract was the only reasonable interpretation, and also whether plaintiff's interpretation was reasonable or whether it was impossible to perform. If the latter, and it was impossible to perform, there was no ambiguity and no question of fact, only a question of law to decide, in fact, what that contract means.
Counsel, if we look at that over here, if we look at that contract language, I'm looking at the interaction between 1 and 2 under B. Is there a way, could the plaintiffs have directly paid the medical bills and in that way take advantage of their lower rate and then get reimbursed by Grange?
Your Honor, there was no evidence, in fact, to suggest that. But I was thinking of hypotheticals over the weekend. One of those to me came to mind was that even if plaintiffs went to the same providers and said, we are insureds of Medical Mutual, but we don't want to submit this claim to our health insurance, we want to pay you in cash, would the provider be obligated to charge plaintiffs the cash price what they had agreed to with Medical Mutual? And I think the answer is no. There certainly is no evidence of an agreement between the providers and Medical Mutual that would require them to do that. And there's not even evidence of the actual agreement, the insurance agreement, between plaintiffs and Medical Mutual.
So this really turns on contract principles, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right, and Grange could not be considered a beneficiary in any way of the contract of the insured with Medical Mutual.
There is certainly no evidence that Grange was a third-party beneficiary of that contract, or that Grange or plaintiffs were third-party beneficiaries of the contracts between Medical Mutual and the providers.
And was there ever a claim of that, that Grange was a third-party beneficiary?
No, Your Honor. That issue and argument was never raised at any level at this proceeding.
Did you suggest the appellate court erred by not following an established case of our court? Did you reference a case that we had?
I did, Your Honor.
I didn't get the name.
The Lager, L-A-G-E-R, which was in 2008, involving uninsured motorist coverage and an interpretation of an insurance policy. And the Porterfield decision, which was in 2005, both are in our table of authorities. Porterfield involved an interpretation of a statute, but the majority opinion actually went to lengths to address the question of how arguments concerning ambiguities in either statutory or contract law should be resolved under Ohio law.
So do we need to articulate how we deal with ambiguities in this case, or do we need to define what this language in B2 means, or what are you asking us to do here?
Well, directly to reverse the Court of Appeals and reinstate the trial court's decision dismissing plaintiff's claims.
And but is that in line with our earlier announced rules of law in Lager and Porterfield, or
yes, Your
is
Honor,
there something else that we need to write here?
No, it's directly on point. In fact, this court could, if it chose, is to summarily reverse the Court of Appeals and reinstate the trial court's opinion. But because this appears to be a recurring problem, at least for the fact that we've seen this in the last 3 years, of allowing unreasonable interpretations to persist and survive in early.
Where have we seen it other than this case in the last 3 years?
I've seen it in an argument I had before this court just a little less than 2 years ago in Cullen versus State Farm, a similar alleged class action.
We have stated, though, in several cases that it's reasonable conflicting interpretations that lead to ambiguity, have we not?
You're absolutely right, Your Honor. And several courts of appeals of this state and the Sixth Circuit as well has reiterated that rule. So the rule should be clear. It's just apparently not being followed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Connick.
Madam Justice, may it please the court. My name is Tom Connick. I'm pleased and privileged to be here today on behalf of Philip and Heidi LeBoy. There's a conflation here between the rates and a discount. The language in the policy is critical. Any negotiated reduced rate accepted by a medical provider. As counsel said, we agree that that language is unambiguous, but it's also overly broad. And the question is, how to reasonably apply that language to the facts of this case. We have argued throughout this case that there's two parties to a contract. This insurance policy is a contract. We all know that. There's two parties to that contract, the insurance company and the insured. There's nothing in this language that says Grange should be the sole beneficiary of a lesser negotiated rate.
Counsel, you're asking us to apply the facts of this case to the law of Ohio.
Correct.
And in your brief, you suggest that the Medical Mutual rate is one half the rate of the Grange rate.
Correct.
Is that in the record before us?
That is not in the record. That is what it's commonly accepted.
It's in your brief.
There is, and we put that in there because it's really commonly accepted. Other than Medicare.
Wait, stop there.
Sure.
It's not commonly accepted here today by me.
Understood.
So I'm trying to ask you, the Court of Appeals said we better send this back and get these facts nailed down. Are the facts so clear here?
Are the facts so clear here on for what?
For applying the legal principles you want this court to endorse.
Well, I think so.
How much money was involved here?
About $900 difference, about $800, $900 difference. And the issue is, there, as I said, there's two parties to the contract. One party has access, or the ability to use is really the better phrase, a discount. and that is the insured through the medical, their private medical health care provider. The other party, Grange, also has the ability to use a lesser negotiated rate through their third-party review works. When you take those two discounts, Grange should pay the lesser of the two discounts. We're not asking Grange, and this is where there is a conflation between rates and discounts. We're not asking Grange to go into Medical Mutual's records, their proprietary documentation, their negotiations with third parties, and steal their rates or get their rates. That's not what we're saying. That's not what we've ever said. What we're saying is when one of their insureds who has private health insurance, who pays a separate premium for that private health insurance, has the ability to use a discount that is lesser than the discount that Grange can obtain through their third-party review works, then Grange should pay that amount.
And how would that happen?
How would that happen? Well, and you asked it before, Justice, and that's a very good question. How that would happen is the insured would go to their private health carrier, get that bill paid, and go to Grange and get it reimbursed. And all Grange would have to do, and it's not a difficult hypothetical. They say it's impossible and it's ridiculous. It's quite possible and quite reasonable because they do it in other instances. Is they take that bill, they get an explanation of benefits from their private health insurance company, they take it over to their claims adjuster and say, please reimburse that. And now Grange either reimburses the insured, and the insured reimburses their health carrier, or Grange just directly pays the health carrier the reimbursement.
Why did your client submit anything to Grange if that's what they wanted to do? The problem here.
Well, that's a great question, Chief Justice. I was not involved at the lower level negotiation of the claim, but the way that happened, my understanding is there was an inadvertent submission of medical bills to both Grange and the private health care insurer.
That was done by accident?
It was done by accident by either my clients or their counsel who was representing them. But what happened as a result of that is we see this now great distinction that Grange is not applying by this language.
Well, counsel, yeah. Both Justice French and Chief Justice, your whole case, in your view, hangs on the second part of Part B, any negotiated rate accepted by a medical provider.
That's correct.
Now, Grange cannot be Karnak, the all-knowing, all-seeing. As Justice French and the Chief Justice have indicated, if something less than what they've set up contractually to get discounts through their third party that negotiates these things, if there's a better deal available, doesn't your client, who is the only person in control of that, have the obligation to put that in motion, and your client, without your great advice, thought they were going to collect twice. They submitted, they thought the bills were going to get paid twice and they'd pocket the money. They didn't understand that Medical Mutual, for example, sends out questionnaires. Was this injury caused by workers, covered by workers' comp? Was somebody else at fault? They're going to get reimbursed, and Grange has certain provisions in their contract. So these your clients think, I'm going to get a double bite at the apple here, and They set up the problem, so why should they benefit from a problem that they only could control? Because they are the only ones that had the knowledge of the better discount.
Because they're not the only ones that can control, and that's a great question, and let me answer it this way.
You've got nothing but great questions so
That's a phenomenal question.
Give us some great answers.
Well, here hopefully comes a great answer. It's the option, okay? First of all, my clients weren't looking to double collect as far as I know. But here's the issue. The insurance company has an obligation, okay, especially in a first-party situation, to provide notice and provide options to their insureds as to what they can and cannot receive and what they can and cannot do under the policy. And all Grange has to do is set up a policy of asking their insureds, do you have private health insurance? Yes? Okay. Well, then, if you do, then you can submit your claims to the medical through the MedPay, or you can submit your claims to the private health insurance company, and we will reimburse it. Now,
the obligation of the counsel for the plaintiff?
I think it's an obligation.
To determine how best to satisfy the obligations for the medical services. It's not the obligation of, it seems to me, the carrier is just paying whatever bills are coming in. And if I understood Mr. Johnson's argument, he said our company has negotiated through review works rates that we get a better deal than than having to pay full value, and we pass that on to our insureds.
Well, I disagree with that.
That's Justice, not right.
I disagree with it because of this reason. Because insurance companies have the obligation, because of the nature of an insurance policy and the nature of insurance coverage, to advise their insureds what they can and cannot get under the policy, what they can and cannot do. And let me point this out.
Let me ask you a question on that line.
Sure.
If there were a medical bill for $100 and the insurance carrier, Grange, can pay $60 instead of the full $100, does your client not benefit by the $40 saving?
Well, under that very narrow fact pattern, they would. But in this case, there was even a lesser amount that my client could have benefited from when they settled on the third-party tortfeasor.
How do you put the obligation on Grange to know all of the rate of reimbursement from all of the medical providers? I mean, we happen to be dealing with Medical Mutual, but they're literally.
We're not asking for that, and they don't have to have knowledge of all the other rates that the private health insurers have in the entire nation. All they need to know is whether or not they're insured in a particular instance has the benefit of a discount from their private health insurance company, and if they do, is it lesser than the lesser?
How are they going to know that?
Because they ask,
Who asks?
The insurance company. The adjuster asks.
Asks and who?
No. How do they know the lesser rate of Medical Mutual? How do they know what Medical Mutual pays?
Because they give the insured an option of submitting their medical bills to their private health insurer.
All right, and what happens if the medical bill is higher?
From the medical health insurer?
Yeah.
That will likely not happen 99%
of the time,
but if
record.
It is, then they recover under their medical pay coverage. They're paying two premiums, Madam Justice.
Yeah, I understand
so
that, but you're making a presumption that the healthcare provider will always have a lesser amount negotiated than in casualty.
Because historically, other than Medicaid,
is that in the record?
It's not in the record. But you're asked if you want me to answer the question. Historically, other than Medicare or Medicaid, the lowest medical health rates are from the large private health insurance companies. And again, it's about the option. Just provide the insured the option because they do it here. And this is
what we're all struggling with is, you know, we all have health insurance coverage. We have bills submitted. We're familiar with this. And we don't know, as the person submitting medical bills, nobody knows what kind of discounts their health insurer has in place. They don't know that.
But they will when they get the explanation of benefits, and then they submit it to Grange for reimbursement, and Grange pays the lesser of the two rates.
But what if I don't want to do that?
I was going to say the contract. We're talking. You said at the beginning that there are two parties to the contract.
Correct.
And it seems to me that you want to be rewriting a contract to include duties and obligations of a third party.
Not true.
And we're going beyond what was actually agreed to by Grange and the insured.
That's not true because the language, again, if you look at the language, it's any negotiated reduced rate accepted by a medical provider. So if the insured submits their claim to their private health insurer, and they get an explanation of benefits, and they submit it to Grange, and that discount that they are going to get, it's not an if, they are going to get it from their private health insurance company, is less than the negotiated reduced rate that Grange can get from a review works, then Grange should pay that. And because the one over here that the insured got from the private health insurer is a lesser negotiated reduced rate accepted by a medical provider.
So maybe that's where I'm still confused by the Court of Appeals. What you're saying is there were two rates that could be paid in this case.
Right.
You're saying that you wanted your insurance company to pay the lower rate.
Right. What I think the 8th
District... Isn't that what the Court of Appeals said?
Yes.
Okay, we're good with that?
The 8th District Court of Appeals was saying that. Grange has argued this whole case that there's only one interpretation of the language that says any negotiated reduced rate.
The Court
rate.
Of Appeals called that absurd.
No, the Court of Appeals said that that's unambiguous, but there needs to be additional fact-finding to determine whether or not Grange is right in its contention that they are the only ones who can benefit from
that. So I guess I'll ask the same question of you that I asked your opposing counsel. Why are we here today if the Court of Appeals said go back and get the facts straight?
I have absolutely no idea. It wasn't my idea, Your Honor.
Is that a great question?
That's a great question.
Okay.
As much as I love being here, I don't think this case should be here before this court.
Mr. Connick, could we avoid all of this if your client would simply submit all of the medical bills to his own medical carrier?
Well, I think that's part of the idea, yeah. And then
I don't know what you
mean about I don't know about
part of
all
the
of them.
Idea. If you think that your client gets a better rate from a medical provider because your client has paid a premium to that provider,
right?
Then your client has the opportunity to submit all medical bills to that provider.
Right. And that,
that
option,
right?
Well,
and then we don't have this issue.
That very could well be. And that brings up the question is why medical payment coverage is even being sold. Because if they have the benefit of going to the private health
insurance. Well, that's not before us today.
I know
why
it's not
being sold.
But it goes to the
other question would be why'd you buy it?
But it goes to the option. Well, it goes to the option. When I get
what option?
When I get in an
I don't understand what you mean by option.
I'm going to tell you right now. When I get into a car accident, okay, and I'm injured, and I go to Grange, and I say, "Hey, I'm injured. I have these medical bills." Grange should say to me, "Do you have private health insurance?" And if I do, I should say yes.
So you
and
want
Grange
us
should
to
say,
put
well,
a duty on all carriers when they handle claims to acquire?
It's a simple question, and yes, because insurance companies. Because of the sophistication of their coverages and their policies and the adhesive nature of those policies and the unsophistication of a consumer, they need to advise insureds of this.
And
I
if
agree.
There were some medical provider that paid at a rate higher than what Grange was able to negotiate,
then Grange
then what would you have Grange do? Have them submit the medical payment or how would Grange fathom
again,
that?
Again, this is the way it could be done, and it's very reasonable. The insured goes to their private health insurer and gets the payments and gets the explanation of benefits like we all do. They take that explanation of benefits and they go to Grange and they say,
but your client didn't do that.
They did actually. That's why we're here, because we asked Grange to reimburse us that amount and they wouldn't.
Counsel, you'd like the Court of Appeals to be affirmed, and I'm going to read you paragraph 6 of their opinion.
Of the Court of Appeals opinion?
Yes, and ask if you agree with what they say there. Section B2 requires Grange to pay any negotiated reduced rate accepted by a health care provider. Taken literally, this section clearly indicates that Grange's duty to pay a negotiated reduced rate is without qualification and applies regardless of geographic proximity or even privity of contract. It would apply to rates negotiated on the other side of the globe or to a rate negotiated by someone who perhaps persuades a medical provider to accept less than the provider's normal rate for service. The words are plain, there is no ambiguity. You agree with all of that?
I agree that not with all of it. I agree, what the eighth issue
because
would...
it seems to say that if Uncle Joe
and we don't
goes to his nephew, the
right.
doc, and he gets a horrendous discount, Grange is supposed to get that same discount for your clients.
And we don't agree with that. We've never agreed with that, Your Honor, and we've argued against that. We have said that what is possible in this case is the available discount to our insurers through a private health insurance carrier is very reasonable and has the ability to be used by Grange to pay the lesser rate. We do concede, and we have all along, that yes, that's unambiguous, and yes, having Grange be responsible for paying a rate in Anchorage, Alaska, would be unreasonable. We've never disagreed with
but
that.
But that's not what the Court of Appeals says.
Well, I think the Court of Appeals is saying, go back and do some fact finding to determine whether or not Grange's interpretation is the only one that is reasonable, which we do not think it is. We think Council, we have a reasonable interpretation.
But didn't that already occur? Weren't there already depositions where Grange said, we don't have a contract with those providers to provide that rate. We couldn't have paid that rate.
There were depositions about that, but Grange also indicated that they were able to pay somebody they didn't have a contract with if there was a lesser discount provided them. And that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about rates, again, Justice. We're not talking about Grange going to Medical Mutual and saying, here, open your books, let me see what you have, and we want to take your rates. What we're saying is if you're insured, if a Grange insured comes to you with a lesser negotiated, the benefit of a lesser negotiated reduced rate, a discount that they benefit from their private health insurer, and they give it to you, Grange Insurance Company, if it's lesser than the one that you can negotiate with ReviewWorks, you have to pay it.
What about if the provider has a lesser rate with another health care provider? Okay, not your client's health care provider, but the hospital has another negotiated rate with another health care provider that's even lower than what Medical Mutual, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, reading that language, the Grange would be obligated to take advantage of that contract and not the bill that was actually paid by Medical Mutual.
No, Grange, again, Your Honor, Madam Justice, Chief Justice, we're not asking Grange to take advantage of anybody else's contracts with a third party. We're not asking that. All we're asking for Grange to do is give the insureds an option of using a discount that is available to the insured through their own explanation of benefits from their private health insurer, and if it's less than the amount that they negotiate with ReviewWorks, then pay it. We're not asking them to get into contracts with third parties that private health insurers have. It's impossible.
So I know it's impossible, but I think that that's
not what we've never argued that.
That may be not what you want, but I think that, you know, that may be not what you're asking for, but I think if the interpretation is such as the 8th District is doing here, that's where we end up.
I disagree, because what the 8th District is asking is to go back and find out if that's the only reasonable interpretation. And we believe a reasonable interpretation is allowing the insured to get reimbursed from Grange once they submit to Grange an explanation of benefits of the discount that they were able to get from their private health insurer.
So you're saying match the discount of the insured. If the insured has a discount, you want Grange to match it, basically.
We want Grange to pay the lesser of the two.
Thank you.
Just like the contract says.
Counsel, I want to make sure I understand what you're saying then.
Yes, sir.
Ultimately, this money is coming out of your client's settlement, correct?
That's correct.
So you are saying a reasonable interpretation is don't overpay the doc because you're using my money.
That is absolutely correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Counsel, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will be brief to the point. Two things. Medical Mutual, if Grange contacted them and asked them what their rates are, is very unlikely to tell Grange what those rates are. Their negotiated rates with providers are confidential and proprietary, and they certainly wouldn't be able to be.
But counsel, on a subrogation theory under this contract, Grange could say to Medical Mutual, what'd you pay on this claim?
By the time that all the payments had occurred, yes. That's correct.
And if that was less than Grange was planning on paying, why would they pay more?
No, by the time that question would be asked, those payments had already been made by Grange.
Could you hold off making payments? The client submits medical bills to Grange, and I'm presuming if you don't make those payments, the client is upset.
And in fact, if Grange held off making payments, it could in fact be exposed to liability for mishandling the claim and or bad faith. That's the purpose of MedPay coverage to begin with, is to pay claims promptly. Only with unless an insured specifically said, would you please withhold or slow down payment, and from my standpoint, would be confirmed in writing to make sure that that in fact that's the insured's wishes. But the back to my point with respect to Medical Mutual's rates, not only is it unlikely Medical Mutual would tell Grange, a quasi-competitor, what its rates are, then to go to a provider, each provider, and say, I know you're entitled to more from us, Grange, through ReviewWorks, but would you please take less because you've agreed to less with Medical Mutual is even more unrealistic. And finally, as Justice French noted, there's already been fact-finding. And in fact, the Court of Appeals noted there was fact-finding. Plaintiffs had an opportunity in response to Grange's motion for summary judgment to file opposing evidence. They didn't file a motion under Rule 56F. Summary judgment was fully briefed. After it was briefed, plaintiffs then asked for leave by the trial court to go take depositions of Grange folks, as well as subpoena third-party subpoenas, Medical Mutual. Over Grange's objection, the trial court granted that motion. Plaintiffs took depositions of Grange personnel. Plaintiffs never subpoenaed records or personnel from Medical Mutual. So they've had not one, but two opportunities to present evidence in support of their theory, which is a legal question in any event.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you adjourn court, please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.